Bob Fisher. Bob, good morning. How are you?
I'm fine, Mike. How about you?
I'm great. And Bob is the past president of the Bird Conservation Network, and one of the presenters of a talk called Wind Turbines in Lake Michigan, How They Might Impact Our Birds. Now, do you pronounce it turbine or turbine?
Well, either way, depending, I guess, on who I'm talking to. I think it's turbine, but
I do too. That's what we're going to go with. So I'm going to fly in the face of what Ron Kyle-Gill thinks on Mighty House here in Chicago's Progressive Talk and say turbine, because that's the way I've always pronounced it. You are also and the reason you're one of the reasons you're qualified to speak to this. You've been not only a past president of the Bird Conservation Network, but you were on the Lake Michigan Offshore Wind Energy Advisory Council.
That's correct, yes. Yeah, that council was formed a couple of years ago as a result of some legislation put forward by Robin Gable, Representative Gable, and eventually signed by the governor. And the council was created essentially to provide guidance, if you will, to the Illinois Department of Natural Resources on developing policies for when, if lake bed leases might be granted to erect turbines in Lake Michigan.
And you guys were, yeah, that had its mandate in 2011, and then it was to provide a report of its findings to the General Assembly, which it did.
Exactly.
Last year.
Right, mid-year last year. And for those interested, you can Google that acronym, if you can remember that acronym, and find the report fairly easily.
Bob, I'm way ahead of you. I've got the link on my website.
All right.
You just go to MikeNovak.net, go to this week's show, and if you scroll down about two-thirds of the way, you'll see a sentence that says, the full report can be found here, and you can link on that. And one of the things that you guys addressed in this, now there were a lot of issues. There are a number of issues. It's not just birds and bats in putting wind power in Lake Michigan. And among the things that you were tasked with finding out, appropriate criteria for the department to use, review applications for offshore wind development, criteria for identifying areas that are favorable, acceptable, and unacceptable for offshore wind development, including protecting wildlife, protected habitats, navigation, commercial fisheries, and recreational uses of Lake Michigan, and on and on and on. So you had to look at all of these. But yours, what you're speaking on in particular, is the effect of birds. And this is something I've talked about on the show before, because I get emails from another bird organization, the American Bird Conservancy, ABC.
Sure.
They're pretty rabidly going after wind turbines. And I'm not exactly sure why, because if you look at the numbers, the birds killed by wind turbines are minuscule compared to buildings and even cats and predators, other predators. Does the organization that you were with, the Bird Conservation Network, take the same stand?
No, you know, the issue with turbines is largely not not an issue of collisions with birds. There are some exceptions to that, but in general, that's not the major issue. The principal issue, and that goes right to the heart of turbines out in the lake, the principal issue is, I guess, what I'll call avoidance. And that's the idea that if you build a turbine or a turbine farm, that the birds that might otherwise use that area won't. And that can have some consequences for them. Specifically in the lake, Mike, the shoal waters where you can build the turbines are, you know, there's a, at least currently, there's a depth limit in terms of anchoring them to the bottom, is about 30 meters or let's say nominally 100 feet. And some of those same shoals where you could do that are used by particularly in this case, by wintering water birds, diving ducks, loons, and grebes, and so forth. And the fact is that a couple of things are not really known. One thing that's not known is how many and what species are using the lake. And in this case, we're obviously talking about the south end of Lake Michigan. There is some anecdotal information, but it's not. Nobody knows in detail what's there. That is being rectified. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife found some money and passed it along to the Great Lakes Commission to administer, essentially to do surveys of the lake. Not, by the way, not just Lake Michigan, but the other Great Lakes as well, to determine, where are the water birds, what are they doing, how many are there, and so forth. And part of my talk at Wild Things will be to talk a little bit about what you might say early returns on that research. And so I think the question is not so much are turbines good or bad for birds? The question is what locations might be better or worse for birds, again, particularly the water birds that use the lake, again, particularly in the fall and the winter. So it's not a simple, we hate turbines. Not at all, no.
Well, let's get back to that. You say that turbines the collisions are not a particular issue with turbines and birds. Is that just here? Because I know that some of the questions are I've done some reading on this over the last couple of years, and the questions seem to be, first of all, placement. And if you're putting them in southern Lake Michigan, this is a migratory pattern,
or
the highway, if you will. This is where a lot of birds travel, I suspect, because of prevailing winds and so forth and the lake and whatever. But also, often turbines are put in canyons, and the complaint is that that's where raptors tend to travel through, and that's why there have been mortality rates associated with turbines in canyons.
Exactly. And there's sort of several answers to that thesis. The famous Altamont Pass out in California was a case where turbines were built, and at the time nobody realized how much those same areas were being used by large raptors, and collisions was definitely an issue there. And as you probably know, they've changed their practices a bit to try and minimize that. I don't know that they've eliminated that. When you talk about turbines in the lake, if you're talking about migratory songbirds, thrushes and so forth, that's definitely an issue at times, particularly when there's appropriate or inappropriate weather conditions. If you get a sudden fog or lowering cloud early in the morning when these birds are moving from the lake on shore, you risk having collisions being a problem. But there's a relatively simple fix to that, and that is, if you know that weather event's going to happen, you can turn the turbines off, and so the collisions become less of an issue. Obviously, I'm simplifying that, but...
Well, I was reading how studies were done where, Spain. I guess it was in Spain where there was a wind farm, and there were spotters out there seeing when birds were arriving, and then they would actually turn off some of the turbines and then turn them back on, and they had 7/100ths of a power drain or less power generated because of that, and yet the mortality rate was decreased by 50%.
Right.
That seems like a great trade-off.
Yeah, clearly the folks who design and build turbines and the companies that operate them have steadily come to the realization that there are some operational things, there are some design things that they can minimize the collisions as an issue. And if those things are done, it becomes less of an issue and less of a problem. But again, the other issue, and clearly, Mike, it's not known. I mean, most of the studies of turbines and their effects on water birds have been done in Europe. And the one thing that some of those studies have shown is that the water birds, the ducks, and so forth, avoid the farms. They don't use those areas. So the question here in our end of the lake, you might say, is pretty simple. If there are a lot of ducks, a lot of waterfowl, a lot of loons and grebes using these areas in the winter to feed, and they get pushed off of those areas by wind turbine farms, where do they go? Do they have alternate areas they can feed, and will that affect their fitness? You know, it's a whole bunch of questions. But the first thing you always have to do is you have to find out what's there and how much and how, and that's what these studies that are happening as we speak. That's what'll hopefully answer some of those questions.
That's Bob Fisher, who's the past president of the Bird Conservation Network. What are you doing presently?
Well, presently I'm still active in BCN. I'm actually currently president of the Illinois Ornithological Society, which is another fairly impressive title I'm a volunteer president, shall we say.
Well, I know all about being a volunteer president of an organization.
Yeah.
He's speaking at the Wild Things Conference.
I am, as are 100 other people. There's, it's February 2nd. It's registration is still open. I've attended every one. There have been five. And if you want to go someplace and feel good about what's going on, citizen science, and how here in the Chicago area, how we're, I think, very actively approaching and solving and taking wonderful steps forward on sort of striking a balance between environmental issues and the quality of life issues and so forth that we have here in Chicago. So Wild Things is a great, great event. There are 100 talk schedule. There's a number of them on gardening. You can learn about amphibians. You can learn about a whole host of things. It's, I think the registration, Mike, is, I think it's $40 and $25 for students. But, I mean, you get a day's worth of just feeling good about what's going on, and you learn a lot. Every time I go, I learn something. So, are you going to go? Are you hoping to?
I'm hoping to go. And I think that a couple of people in the room are thinking about that as well.
I'll absolutely be there.
Yeah.
I was just perusing the schedule. It looks like some really great events on so many topics.
Fantastic.
It's just the place to be. If you care about the environment and you want to know what other people think. And, there's always a danger to get in a group of like-minded people because we all tend to reinforce our own preconceptions. But on the other hand, it's a great feeling in this case.
Well, but you're also providing a lot of information. I've had Sarah kind of looking at some of the different talks that are going to be there. What stands out when you're looking at it, Sarah?
I'm really interested in checking out the creating native eco gardens in your community. It looks like I'm kind of drawn to the sea track.
Mm-hmm.
What's the sea track? and you got to remember that this is all in one day.
I know.
They got the A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H. It goes through the M track, which is any of the above.
So it's the backyards, neighborhoods, and urban environment, but there's also a bird conservation track, an ecological land management and restoration track, volunteer and community building, an outreach track. I mean, I need to duplicate myself so I could be in two places at the same time.
Yeah, that's the biggest problem, is you want to go to about six of the talks and you just can't. But if you pick and choose, you can come up with a pretty impressive cross-section. And, it's not just volunteers. It's a lot of our local professionals, folks who work at the Cook County Forest Preserve District, DuPage Lake. It's a lot of people who know a lot about what they're talking about, and you can just learn a tremendous amount by going there.
And like you said, it's only $40, and you have to, if you want to register online, you got to do it by the end of today.
Exactly. Yeah.
If you're a student, it's only $25.
Yep, you can walk up even on the day of the event, but you know, as always with any event like this, the organizers need to know, have a rough idea how many people are coming. So I would hope people would, you just Google Wild Things 2013, and that'll take you right to the conference's homepage, and it's very easy to register right online. So,
Of course, I will say that it's also on my website, MikeNovak.net. I've got all the...
Thank you for that.
And your Facebook page.
And my Facebook page now, thanks to Lisa Albrecht. Now that we've told people how much is going on, I have just a couple more questions. I want to get back to you on this subject about the wind turbines in Lake Michigan. First of all, it amazes me. You're saying, well, we need to do these studies about whether... You mean we haven't done them yet? Why don't we know about those patterns already?
I think because... partially because there was a lot of anecdotal information, but not any sort of serious taking a look at what's actually going on out in the lakes. And that may have been strictly because... most of the agencies that are involved in resource management and so forth weren't concerned with what's happening 6 or 7 miles out in the lake. So I guess these two things have come together. A lot of people have identified the fact that we really don't know what's out there. So... Fish and Wildlife and other groups, the wind turbine folks themselves, have stepped forward and said, well, let's find out. So I think it's just a juxtaposition, you might say, of the need and the ability. You know, most of it's aerial survey stuff, and the advent of these GIS systems allows them to take the aerial survey data that they do and overlay that so that they can identify underwater features that correspond with concentrations of ducks and geese, not so much geese, but ducks and other water birds. And also a lot of these tracking studies that are being done where they're putting transmitters on waterfowl, on loons and so forth, is allowing people to develop those overlays on the maps so that you can see where these birds are going, how long they stay in a particular location, when do they move, and so on and so forth. There's a really great graphic on, I think it's called loon migration. I suppose if you Google that, you'll probably find it. I believe it's a Fish and Wildlife website. And there's a great graphic showing of how a bunch of loons that they put transmitters on up in northwestern Wisconsin, exactly how they travel, how they move, how fast they move, so how long they're in the lake and so forth. Most of the loons that migrate through here end up in the Gulf, but they do use the lake on their way.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, there are a lot of ducks, particularly the diving ducks. The sort of the poster child for that is a duck species called a long-tailed duck, spend the winter. That's where they forage. Their bottom feeders, their diving ducks, they eat invertebrates. Some of them eat bottom vegetation and so forth. And for years, people have known that, but there's never been really a systematic scientific study to say, well, how many and how long and where. So the wind turbine possibilities created the need for that data, and that need I think now is being filled.
I'm looking right now. I went to loon study, loon migration, And are you talking about that chart where the little dots move across the screen, and then they all go out of like upper Wisconsin and Minnesota, and then they move to the Great. They almost all end up in Lake Michigan, and then they move south from there.
Well, and if you put that in perspective, Mike, this is a small number of loons that they actually tagged. There are a lot more loons going up into Western Ontario and so forth, and those aren't tagged. But these tagged loons are telling you that that's where these birds are going. So, you know, there's just a few dots, but there are an awful lot of them that aren't.
It's really cool.
Transmitters that are doing exactly the same thing.
Did you find the same thing, Lisa, that put that up on the Facebook? Done and done, right?
Done and done.
Yeah. There's another graphic there which shows the travel lines. I don't remember. I believe it's the 2010-2011 study, and it shows the travel lines, and that's also a very useful graphic. In fact, I intend to use that one in my talk in a couple of weeks.
I've clicked on that. It's very cool. This is terrific stuff. So we've got that posted on our Facebook page for folks who are interested in loons. Yeah. Can you do a loon call for us there, Bob?
No, I'm not one of those people.
Oh,
I can't
darn.
Do a loon or a barred owl. I mean, I could play you a tape, Mike, but I'm not sure I'm ready.
I can do Daffy Duck occasionally.
That's a talent too. You have to look at it that way, I guess. So.
I guess it goes something like this: "Thanks for the sour persimmons, Buster."
Very nice.
Pretty good.
It's all over the microphone now, too.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm sure.
I'm going to have to let you go, but I appreciate... just two things before I do let you go. First of all, we should give kudos to the city of Evanston, because from what I understand, this all started because city of Evanston said, hey, we want to put wind power out on the lake opposite.
Exactly.
And then and the General Assembly said, I guess we'll have to take a look at this, huh? And
yeah.
And so that's how this all got rolling, which is very interesting.
Exactly. Yeah.
I found that chart which I actually have a link to this study that was done. It's called A Summary and Comparison of Bird Mortality from Anthropogenic Causes with an Emphasis on Collisions.
Mm-hmm.
You're probably familiar with that study.
I am very much so. And
what's interesting about it is if you look at wind turbine deaths, annual mortality estimate from this study, and again, people have taken issue with some of the research on this. I've had people write to me and say, well, it doesn't take into account blah, 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 blah. And, you know, then my advice to you is do another study. Let's see.
Yeah.
But wind turbine deaths, they estimate at 28,500. And that's that would be U.S., right?
Right.
Okay. Airplanes, interestingly, are less than that. I would think they were more. They're 25,000. But buildings, they estimate at 550 million, half a billion. Power lines, 130 million. Cats, 100 million. And some people think that's really low.
Yeah, as you put it, these are all estimates. There have been some, studies, and those studies are then extrapolated out. But, building collisions, there's an active program here in the Chicago area to monitor, for example, what happens down in the canyons of the city. And there's a lot of data. A lot of that data has been gathered by folks at the Field Museum and a volunteer group called the Chicago Bird Collision Monitors. So there's an increasing depth of information about how big the problem is. And alongside that, there's also a strong movement to try and minimize the problem. So you're talking about building design. You're talking about use of bird-friendly glass so that reflections of trees or those types of things can be minimized or eliminated so that building mortality, for example, can be reduced dramatically by taking engineering steps, if you will. Same thing with power lines. They're learning how to the power line industry isn't dedicated to killing birds. That's if they develop a fix, they'll use it. Same thing with the turbine folks. If they can find a way to minimize or eliminate a problem, they will. I think human ingenuity allows us to do some things that at first seem impossible. And in this case, I think we will learn how to better manage, you know, our impact on the environment so that we're not doing those things. Mm-hmm. You know, the issue of feral cats, there's a pretty simple solution to that. If we could get, just to pick a number, if three-quarters of the people that let their cats out every night didn't, the mortality of birds and small mammals would be reduced substantially. So that's partially that's education. So, you know, I think, Mike, I'm an optimist. I think if you identify a problem and people, you know, get together and discuss how to solve it, you can solve it. Obviously, you can't solve it maybe so that you get 100% safety, but you can certainly minimize the impact of what we do on the creatures around us that we live with.
And that's a great way to end this. Bob Fisher will be at Wild Things Conference. That's on the 2nd of February at UIC in Chicago. Lots of great, like you said, 90 of these things going on. And Bob will be presenting this subject about wind turbines in Lake Michigan. You'll get to see lots of graphics and get to see some of that stuff that we were talking about on the air. I appreciate you being on the show this morning, Bob, and I hope we meet in person soon.
Well, I look forward to it, Mike, and I thank you for the opportunity to talk to you.
All right, take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.